two, three, eight.
My name is Ragnar Kjartansson, and I'm an artist. I am here doing the Icelandic Pavilion in the Venice Biennale, and my piece is two pieces. It's one video work, one video installation, and a performance piece, a 6 months long performance piece. The videos are a musical, yeah, they're a musical journey, like they say. I went with my collaborator David Thorjonsson to Banff in the Rocky Mountains, into the kind of the Walt Disney wilderness. In the frost, it was like from 20 to 30 degrees frost. We recorded outside music we had made like 1 week before in a cabin. The video is very much like kind of it's very static. It's like paintings with music, and it's very much a kind of a study of musicians playing, kind of recording, and also in this monumental circumstances, kind of. Coming from the loop, the end is just because the work will. It's all about the end of the loop. This work. Like on the 22nd of November, this will end. It's the moment we're kind of quietly waiting for. Like how the piece will end, you know. So the piece is ready in the end. So that is one reason why it's called the end. And also there's kind of this romantic notion of the end. Mainly it's like a kind of a cinematic feel. That when you come into the space, when I came into the space, When you know, thinking about what to do in it, I just had this kind of the end feeling about it. It was like a cinematic feeling I got in here. And so this piece very much came from that feeling in a way. And I was writing letters with my friend Andreas Eriksson. And he kind of described this feeling, saying that I imagine your pavilion like a lighthouse at the end of the world. And on the dock, there's a man smoking, a man without fate, something like that. So it's kind of this kind of dish, this epic feel of the Grand Canal. And so that also inspired the end. And also the Rocky Mountains video, they feel like some, they all kind of, especially like the piano shot looks like the end shot. It's all very, and the music feels like some kind of the last song of those two guys or something like that. And then also it was derived from the feeling of being back home in Iceland, where suddenly everything was suddenly the end. Like the whole system collapsed, and this whole kind of macho money system just totally collapsed. And there was this big feel of the end of masculinity or something in Iceland now, which is very interesting, because like the whole kind of economic crash is all due to some kind of a phallic competition thing, that, you know, it's all like getting richer, bigger, like, and then it all crumbled, and like the only company left in Iceland, the only like investment company that is okay, is one that was solemnly run by women. It's kind of interesting. Yeah. Like we Icelandic artists have been talking about it. It's like, it's total freedom. But we've been like stuck in this cliche, you know, that we're this nature happy country. And suddenly it's kind of like this crisis have put the, you know, reality into, like, you know, the facade is off. The country was always kind of fucked and weird and evil like any other country. But you know, now it's like a total misunderstanding if you think about that when you go to the Venice Biennale, that you have to be some kind of an image of your nation or something like that. It's just, you know, just an artist, and I'm just doing my stuff, and I mean I hope for the best. And especially it's important if the project goes well, that it's a small country, and it's a poor country now, and we and I mean it is special that we're taking part in the Venice Biennale, you know. We cannot take it for granted, we, as artists. So in that way, it's very important to do a good job that Iceland keeps on. The idea of the romantic art is it is so kind of North European. It is true. Yeah, the kind of like the romantic North, the kind of Scandinavians are always very romantic, and you know, the North Germans, of course, kind of invented it. I mean, it started with Goethe and ended with Hitler, you know. He kind of totally destroyed romanticism, like with a, you know. But it's just I'm very fascinated by romanticism. I'm fascinated by the, you know, this kind of you know, this idea of the Weltschmerz, and this idea of that something is, you know, something mundane is divine and all that. So, but I don't think it actually is geographical. It is, I think, in art history, the pendulum is always between realism and romanticism. I mean, look at like Arte Povera. It's like so romantic. It's like so poetic and romantic. So it's not definitely not a northern thing. I think like the romantic vision is kind of positive in a way that it just turns a blind eye. You know, it like, you know, it makes everything that is, everything that you should worry about beautiful, you know. It's made poverty and death beautiful, you know. Yeah, it's totally escapism from reality. But then again, it's also even more real than reality. Your head, our poetic heads, they are what make our reality. So it is escapism, and also it's a survival instinct. You just have to be romantic to survive in this world. It is like it's one of my favorite quotes from a book by Halldór Laxness, who's an Icelandic author. It's called Christianity Under the Glacier. And the quote is, "The one who does not live in fiction will not survive in this world." It's a good quote. And in a way, I've tried to live by this rule in a way, to put my life in fictitious circumstances like this. I just think it, in a way, it's like religion. You look for something divine to. So they're totally knitted together, the reality and the fiction. But the fiction makes the reality so much more bearable, so much more fun, so much more alive. So, I mean, like here we are in this unreal situation which has become our reality. I mean, this piece is total escapism. Like, I don't have to face kind of anything. I'm just in this piece, you know. You know, I have no time to go to the bank and, you know, and think about my troubles. I'm just stuck here in my piece, you know. We've been talking about it, me and Pot, that it's some kind of escapism from Iceland now. It's really rough times, and we're just in this kind of total made-up world here. And you know, we're in a way, we are, what do you call them, the ones who run away from the army. Desertore, yeah. Just desertore, like, you know, just finding a spot in the woods and just drinking wine and just like hearing the bombs in the distance. Both places are, you know, are fictional in a way. Like Venice and Rocky Mountains, they are not real. They're fictional places, which also happen to be real. Actually, I just think it's going to be a really good time in a way. Like a really kind of reflective, quiet time where you're just doing something, one thing. We're always going somewhere with our telephones and like little, and we just put ourselves in the situation. We cannot go anywhere. We're just in this. So. Like, I'm also raised in the theater, and just the theater is this place where just regular people have the work of dropping into characters and escaping reality. And I just found that so fascinating by the theater. It's like in Ingmar Bergman biography, it describes when as a kid he sees like a just, you know, a regular man, but in his costume as some kind of a officer. Then he just comes to the stage door, and just suddenly he just sees the transformation. Like he becomes a fictional character. Like he goes into character, and that is just like a beautiful thing when suddenly theater takes over real life. Yeah. I really like to look at my favorite theater is this like kind of old school theater, you know, a dialogue on a stage in costumes. In a way, I mean, when you've seen so much interesting hardcore avant-garde performance art, like, you know, avant-garde theater is very, you know, does not stand the comparison. So it is like traditional theater. My favorite stuff is just like, you know, Chekhov or Strindberg or something, you know, there's like drama on stage. It's like my favorite thing. Or, you know, or Beckett, or I just want this kind of wall, you know. Yeah. Performance. That's just a big question. I think it's, I mean, it all comes from feministic art, I think, you know, like the modern performance art. I think like, this is very kind of like a gender-like thing, this performance. We're just like this degenerate, weak males here in this palace, you know. I don't know, I'm kind of very drawn to like the strong feministic statements like Caroline Schneemann and that stuff. So yeah, for me it is in a way like I work a lot with the gender issue, with the issue of being male, of the weak male. Which is this kind of romantic male, you know, and I've been studying a lot in my art, and then also going to like the 19th century to study like from Heine, like I did a performance out of Dichterliebe by Heine where he's like it's such a weak male thing, the whole poem. So for me, it is a very much of a study of my gender, of my kind of position. I really don't like masculinity. You know, I think it's cool in some way. I mean, it's cool when you shoot a beer and stuff like that. But I sincerely detested masculinity. So therefore I you know, I detest it and I love it at the same time. It's kind of a thing. Like this performance where I'm this macho kind of studying the macho painter, and that comes from like my grandfather was a macho sculptor, and like his friends were all macho painters. So I was in these kinds of studio when I was a kid, and I was like, argh. It's a friend of mine who's here, like the Icelandic artist Magnus Sigurðarson. He once said that the cliché is the ultimate expression. We're kind of living this artist, and it was like also these stories of, you know, Nordic artists coming to Italy and ruining themselves, you know. You know, it's a psychological experiment. Like, are we going to ruin ourselves like the old Nordic artists did? Like, there is so little feminine aesthetics. They are just, you know, rising now. We're talking about feminism. That was like still like kind of like like really kind of hardcore, you know, making a scream. But I think now are coming artists that have this total feminine aesthetics. They don't have this strong like statements. It's more ambiguous. It's more, I mean, feminine, if you want to say so. It's like, I find that the most interesting art today, where it's kind of coming out of the macho thing. It's becoming like, you know, it's more profound, more complex, and you know, so, like you see, like I am totally a macho artist. Like it's very like, my stuff is very simple, you know. You know, I am a man. I can't help it. You know, I just like do simple stuff. It's kind of coming up, so it's just like kind of artists around me in my like scene back home. It's like Ástís Sif Gunnarsdóttir and Ingibjörg Magnadóttir. And of course, it's like Pepperotti wrist. She's kind of macho too, you know, in a way. She's like, but she sometimes has these kind of profound aesthetics. It's kind of all over the place, you know. It's like something that is whispering under the sheets over the whole art world. It's like, it's kind of hard to name names, you know. It's just something that is, that I think is becoming the most interesting stuff. It's not as cool, it's an attitude. It's this, I think it's like, it's that women artists are becoming free for the revolution. Pioneers have made space, you know. So now it's space for feminine art, yeah. You know, it's hard to like name something, but it's definitely happening. This is the most interesting thing to ever happen in art history, you know. You know, it has always been a man's history, but now it's changing. It's like we are on our way out. So yeah.
Radio Papesse è un progetto di Ilaria Gadens, Carola Haupt e Cristiano Maggi.